You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Let me introduce to you the three candidates we're kicking off our broadcast with today. Dr. Katie Allen, I'm sure, is well known to you. She is the Liberal sitting member for Higgins. Katie Allen, good to see you again. Good morning.
Good morning, Virginia.
And Dr. Michelle Anandaraja, who, of course, became well known to you during the pandemic. She's a well-known infectious diseases physician, and she's the Labor candidate for Higgins as well. Dr. Anandaraja, good morning to you.
Good morning, Virginia.
Nice to talk again. And Sonia Semmons is the Greens candidate for Higgins. She's with you too. Sonia Semmons, good morning to you.
Good morning, Virginia. Thanks.
Well, look, there's a lot to talk about. Higgins covers 39 square kilometres. It's the inner southeast of Melbourne suburbs. You've got a central spine in Higgins that follows the Monash Freeway and Dandenong Road. You've got the suburbs like Paran, South Yarra, Windsor, Ashburton, Carnegie, Ormond and parts of Glen Iris. It's got bands of Labor voting territory at both ends of the seat with a slice of solid Liberal voting territory in between. And how's this for a bit of history? Of the 36 polling places used in the 2019 election, Labor recorded majorities in 19 and the Liberal Party in 17. But Katie Allen got across the line nonetheless. It's always been a safe Liberal seat, and the Liberal Party's two-party preferred vote has consistently been 10% higher than Victoria as a whole until last election. That was the election when it started to shift. So the question, I guess, to be answered today is that shift continuing? Is it pulling in another direction? Or is it completely fragmenting? Or is it consolidating back to the Liberal Party? It's a really interesting seat to be in. I'll start with you on that, Katie Allen. I mean, looking at that really interesting history that you were part of in 2019, but got across the line nonetheless, what's your feeling?
Well, it feels very different this time. And the reason for that is we've had this global pandemic, and I think people are so much more aware of who their local politicians are, whether they're federal, state or indeed council, because they're looking to see what has their local member done for them. And we know this from polling. We know that this election is going to be very hard to call because a local election is very hard to reach into and really get to know. So when I'm on the streets, I get a very interesting response, which is people know who I am, they know what I've delivered for them, and they know that I'm out there fighting for them each and every day.
Michelle Anandaraja, what do you think? I mean, does it mean that politics has become very local because of the pandemic?
Not at all. That's not at all the messaging I'm getting from people. I've door-knocked at least 4,000 homes myself, personally. My team will be hitting approximately 30,000 by the time this campaign is finished, if not higher. And I can tell you that this election is going to be a tough fight. But what I am seeing is that there is a mood for change. There is a rich vein of people, including Liberal people, who are disaffected. They feel abandoned by the current government. They intensely dislike Scott Morrison. And they feel affronted by the values of this current government, who does not represent them. What we have here is incumbency without representation. On the great issues of our time, accelerating climate change, a trust deficit that is so wide and deep that faith goes there to die, on gender inequality, on intergenerational inequality, people want action and they are not going to get it from this government.
Let me go to Sonia Semmons. What do you think?
Well, I think there is mood for change in the electorate, and I do think that that stems from a disappointment in what the government has put forward. I also agree that the pandemic has made us realise the important role the government plays in our everyday lives. But I think ultimately we're in an electorate that's a very progressive and educated electorate, and these people know more than anyone that we're also facing an existential climate crisis. And people are looking for solutions. They're looking for solutions that make a really meaningful difference in protecting the future for our kids and for us and for our country. And I think they're also looking for solutions that make a difference in cost of living to bring the pressures down of the everyday as well.
Let's get to a few of those issues. But first of all, we'll stand back a bit and I'll pick up your point about the pandemic and how that has shifted or changed things. What are the residual effects, if any, for the three of you from both the state management and the federal management of the pandemic that you see are playing out in these elections? I'll start with you, Sonia.
Well, I think people certainly had an experience of incredible personal sacrifice for the greater good. And I think that there's an understanding that we need to make some personal sacrifices to take care of each other. I also think that I also think that people really want to have answers for practical cost of living issues. We've seen the cost of living rise through the crisis and become more difficult for the most vulnerable communities among us, and we want real solutions that do that, and Greens policies offer those visionary solutions.
Okay, my question actually went to whether there's a shadow cast or even a bit of sunshine cast by other state or federal policies in relation to the pandemic. Do you have a response to that, Katie?
Look, I think Australians have really done it tough through this pandemic, and I think there's a sense of togetherness, but there's also a sense of frustration because of the lockdowns here in Victoria. I have to say there's almost a seething rage against the over-egging of the lockdowns. At the sixth lockdown at the end of last year, there's a lot of negativity towards the fact that in New South Wales they seem to have lockdown light. They didn't have these recurrent lockdowns, even though the virus is the same across the borders. It seemed the response in New South Wales seemed better every step of the way than it did here in Victoria. So people were frustrated by that, but they also knew that at the end of the day, the federal government had their back. They were there, whether it was JobKeeper, whether it was raising JobSeeker, whether it was instant asset write-off for businesses or cash flow boost, that we were working every day. And the vaccine rollout, which of course was messy because it had never been done before.
And apparently was now a race, according to Scott Morrison.
Well, actually, I was there at the time, and, you know, with regards to that race, it came from comments about safety. We were doing polling. I was doing polling in Higgins. We had very high vaccine hesitancy, about 50% in Higgins, actually, in January, February. And the safety issue, we had a lecture from the TGA. They said, please, you know, be aware that Australians don't want an emergency approach to this. They want to make sure that safety comes first. And that was because the first 5 months at the start of last year, there was not a death from COVID. And that actually was balancing out people. So
I want to make sure the share of voice is equal here. But it was also very, very clear that that question went to vaccine rollout as well. But Michelle Anandavaraja, tell us about, do you agree that actually those measures that were put in place by the federal government, have they had a lasting positive effect here in the electorate? Are they being brought up with you?
Look, I think that firstly, people are really traumatised from the last 2 years. And I know this as a frontline senior clinician at the Alfred. I've seen the direct and indirect impacts of COVID-19 on people, on individuals, on their livelihoods. Absolutely smashed. There's no question about it. I can't even talk about it. I try to suppress these memories. What I would say, though, is that we saw a fracturing of our federation during the last 2 years. And this really happened due to a lack of national leadership, a lack of national coordination. We have, in Scott Morrison, the most divisive Prime Minister I have ever seen since I came to this country when I was 11 years old. This man would rather play wedge politics than unite the country. And we saw what that did. He pitted Australians against each other. It led to the rise of anti-vaxxers, of a freedom movement of the like that I have never seen in this country. Protests on our streets, businesses stopped in their tracks. That is not the Australia that I know. That is not the Australia that the people of Higgins wants to see.
Okay.
We desperately need a Prime Minister who leads from the front and unites this country.
You've got your three candidates from the Liberal Party, the Labor Party and the Greens this morning, all here in conversation with you live at Malvern Central on Mornings. And we've got a question from the wonderful crowd that's already gathered here, been here since 8:30. Good morning. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Mark. I'm from Paran. And I'd like to ask the local member, why you voted against Federal Integrity Commission?
So let me be clear.
That's a question for Katie Allen there.
With regards to the Federal Integrity Commission, I've been working with the Attorney-General and I've actually met with her a number of times, I think 6 or 7 times, to talk about ensuring that we have the best balance with the Integrity Commission to make sure that we have the balance right going forward. And the government has a very large draft that hasn't been put to government. Now, it hasn't been put as legislation at the moment to Parliament.
Why you've had all this time and haven't put that?
So we put $80 million in the budget and we were working with the intention, but the RDA, the Religious Discrimination Act, was a bill that was being debated at the end of December and it ran into the 7 days of legislation at the start of this year.
I know what you think about that bill, so we might get to that in a moment, but I just want to follow up with you quickly.
My full intention is to support when a Commonwealth Integrity Commission that has got the balance right comes to Parliament, that I will be supporting that.
Why didn't you vote for the one that was in front of the Parliament?
I met with Helen Haynes and I was not comfortable with the one that she put forward.
So I heard from the ovation there in the crowd that a Federal Integrity Commission, that really matters to people here. Can I get a vocal sense of that? All right, well, that matters.
think that's right. I think integrity is important to Parliament, and it's something that I am fighting for, but I want to get the balance right with the bill.
We won't take shouts from the crowd. I don't allow that at Q&A. Why would I allow that here? Goodness me. But we definitely have a microphone. So let's get a response from the other candidates on that, though. Sonia Simmons?
Absolutely. A federal ICAC with teeth is something that every constituent in Higgins wants, and they want to see it brought to bear by Christmas. So the Greens offer a federal ICAC with retrospective powers by Christmas. But further to that, we want to go even further to strengthen our democracy and get dirty donations out of the Parliament. We know that we don't have a Parliament who acts on behalf of the constituents so long as it's taking, you know, millions of dollars from the fossil fuel industry at a time when we're in a climate crisis that relies upon getting out of fossil fuel in order to protect us. So we need to get dirty donations out and strengthen democracy.
Michelle Natarajan, do you feel the Labor Party's on a winner on this issue in the seat of Higgins?
100%. Look, you will, if we are voted in, if we form government on May 22, you will have a National Anti-Corruption Commission by the end of the year. It will be led by Mark Dreyfus, a QC. We are the only party with a QC as who will be the incoming Attorney General. It will have all the powers of a standing Royal Commission. It will have retrospective powers going back 15 years, as well as prospective powers. It will have the ability to bring anyone forward, from a minister down to a staffer, a contractor, an agency, anyone, and it will have public hearings. So it fits the bill, and we desperately need one, because the trust deficit has never been wider or deeper in Australia. People have lost faith with their political leaders.
OK, let's go to another question in the audience here. Good morning. Your name?
Hello, I'm Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
I have a general question, and that is we are struggling with manufacturing. We don't make anything in this country. And generally for any of the candidates, do you have a view, please, on bringing manufacturing back onshore with jobs?
Joanne, it's a good question. Sonia Simmons, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so the Greens have a full platform that sets out a path to bring manufacturing back to Australia. And it starts by making this huge investment in a transition from fossil fuel to renewables, which gives us an opportunity to have green manufacturing here of green minerals and green steel. We can have green steel manufacturing in Australia up and running by the end of the decade. And we must, you know. This is the path that we must have. We have a $19 billion transition program for coal workers. We say the best job for a miner is another mining job, and they can have a renewed investment in good jobs in their own communities. You know, the Hunter region could be a renewables hub, and we could be selling sunshine to our neighbours. We have an economic opportunity here in Australia that we're missing. There's a, you know, the renewables economy, the global renewables economy wants solutions from Australia, and we have to deliver.
Michelle Natarajan?
Absolutely. Look, our pathway to prosperity, future-proofing Australia's prosperity, hinges on two things. The first is decarbonising our economy, going to a low-emissions economy. And the second, and the other side of the coin, is actually reviving onshore manufacturing and industrial capability in our country. In the OECD, a list of 37 rich, mostly rich countries, we are wooden spoon last in the OECD for self-sufficient manufacturing. Australia was once a country that made excellent products, advanced things, especially cars. We made great cars, Ford, Toyota, Holden. And this industry was waved away by Joe Hockey in 2017. As a result, we missed out on the electric vehicle wave. Now, we have $15 billion, which will rise to $30 billion with private co-investment to bring back advanced manufacturing in this country. We're not talking about making paperclips. We're talking about making the products that we need to decarbonise and the rest of the world needs to decarbonise as well.
Katie Allen?
Oh, it seems like we're in furious agreement. We believe in a modern manufacturing fund, which we've already initiated, which have six key planks. The first three are because we know from COVID that we have sovereign supply issues.
I'm not going to ask you to recite the six.
Well, no, it's important because these are our strengths. These are our capabilities and our strengths, which includes obviously health, clean energy, defence. It also includes food and ag. And these are things that we need to make sure we can manufacture here onshore, value add, grow jobs, and make sure we have a clean energy-fuelled economy going forward. So we're in furious agreement.
I don't think anyone would disagree.
And it grows jobs.
But what none of you have spoken about is actually securing the workforce for it, either training it up or dealing with the incredible workforce shortage that we have in virtually every industry. And if you want to move to manufacturing 3.0 or 4.0, you need new generations of workers, which we don't have. Sonia Simmons?
Yeah, so the Greens have what I think is an extraordinarily visionary policy to make TAFE and uni free again, to get the pipeline of workers through.
I know, but it's an incredible amount of money that you're promising without...
Well, it was sort of a
magic pudding or a bottomless well of money.
Not at all. We spent $98 billion in subsidies to a dying fossil fuel industry over the last decade, and we're about to dig I've written it down, $184 billion hole in the budget with tax relief for billionaires. So we can simply redivert these funds into areas where they're needed.
But just briefly, Michelle, we'll come to another question.
Look, the three bottlenecks towards us achieving or realising our ambition are this. First, the skills shortage. The second is industrial capability. And the third is workforce participation. And this really refers to getting women back to work with cheaper, more affordable childcare. The race to net zero requires both men and women participating in this venture. So with skills, we have a $1.2 billion plan to get Australians skilled up, both with free TAFE and 20,000 university places. Industrial capability, we've got $15 billion tucked away to bring onshore manufacturing and sovereign capability back to Australia, something that is badly needed. We are, for example, the world's largest producer of lithium.
Just briefly.
We sell it for $3,000 a tonne. We buy it back as a $14,000 Tesla battery. So, we desperately need to bring onshore manufacturing back, but we also need to address these other bottlenecks.
As is our plan, but we have skills as well, and we have including tax deductibility for small businesses to upskill their employees. We have an education revolution that's going on, including backing in universities.
Okay. Katie Allen is with you, Michelle Anandaraja and Sonia Semmons here in our Candidates Forum in the seat of Higgins. Now, Tom's called in from Carnegie. Tom, go ahead with your question.
Hi, all. I just want to know, all three candidates, how much money you guys have received from political funding this year and why you don't guys support live donation sort of a list, how much they're funding to you guys, because it's becoming a bigger issue because politicians, I feel like, getting corrupted day by day.
It's an issue that comes up constantly on our program, which is a live and full disclosure of your political donations as you lead up to a campaign and during a campaign. What status do you have?
Sonia? The Greens take a position of getting political donations out of Parliament.
Your donations, about disclosing donations you've received and from whom.
Look, we support disclosure of any donation over $1,000, and I think immediate and transparent disclosure.
And what
is important.
You disclose about your donations?
That's what we do. We disclose immediately up on the website all donations over $1,000. That's the Greens policy, it always has been.
Michelle?
We follow the electoral laws right now, which is sitting at a disclosure threshold of around $14,500.
You don't go any further than that.
Yeah, but look,
asking for.
No, if we form government, we will bring in lower that threshold down to $1,000 and introduce real-time disclosure. That's what we want to do, and that's what's actually done in New South Wales, so we'd like to take that federally. I do accept that this is a real issue for a lot of people, and it is, of course. With respect to our policy, look, we take money,
I'm not going to go into your policy because the question actually goes about what you do right now. So just in a nutshell, if Tom went to your website right now, they would not see a real...
That's right, and that's
list
the problem.
Of everyone who's donated to
you. That's the issue. The actual list of donations comes out at about 18
And Katie Allen, Tom wouldn't see that on your page either.
That's correct.
Yep. And is that acceptable?
Well, at the end of the day, our democracy has rules and we follow those. What I'd say is at the state level, the rules have changed, but the unions are exempt. So it's not an even playing field at the state level, and I think that would need to be included. And if the unions are included, then it'll be an even
playing
field.
That's the reason you don't do it, because the unions aren't included?
Well, it's an unfair playing field at the moment, so it'd be important that we make sure it was fair.
It's about personal disclosure, though. I mean,
I follow the rules. I've got a lot of supporters right across Higgins who, follow the rules.
Let's get a question from the audience. Good morning, sir. Your name?
Hi, good morning. My name is Gil. I live in Glenaris. Mm-hmm. And I've, over the years, voted for different parties. And my question now is to Katie Allen. I would like to know, and I distinguish between you and Scott Morrison. However, democratically, is the only way for me to remove Scott Morrison from power is to remove you as the member for Higgins?
No, absolutely not. That's absolutely not the only way, because at the end of the day, Parliament is formed, and then it's the only way to remove Scott Morrison is for the people of Cook to remove Scott Morrison. People of Cook vote in their Member of Parliament. The Member of Parliament then form a government. That government can include all sorts of Members of Parliament. That is our democracy. It happens to be, at the moment, major parties form government, but
The government is formed by a majority of people who come together, and that group of people then decide who their leader is.
I think our questioner knows how parliamentary system representation works, so let's not start
woman-splaining. Statement, not a question.
but the heart of your question is what? That you like Katie Allen, but you don't like Scott Morrison? Is that where we're going here?
Yes, exactly. And I have no choice because I only vote in Higgins. The only way I can affect the outcome with respect to who is our Prime Minister, and I don't want Scott Morrison to be my Prime Minister, the only way I can do that, given Liberal Party rules, as they've changed after last election, the only way I can do that is, unfortunately, to vote you out.
Then let me ask a question, because I did have this on my list for Katie Allen this morning, because you were vocal at the very beginning of this campaign, saying you acknowledge that Scott Morrison is not popular here, and he was going to be, and this was the quote at the start, you know, a drag on your vote, a real challenge for you. Do you feel that he's thrown moderates like you under the bus with his sudden support and reviving of the religious discrimination bill, with his support for Catherine Deaves and her offensive views on trans kids? Going in that extreme direction, is he throwing moderates like you under the bus?
Well, I think the Liberal Party, as John Howard says, is a broad church.
Is that the church you thought you were signing on for?
And I have to say, I have the freedom to make the decisions that reflect my community. That is actually the beauty of the Liberal Party, is that it is... you can reflect your own party, your own constituents, and you can cross the floor. Unlike, for instance, Michelle, she will be unable to cross the floor
Michelle. I'm sticking with you. We'll go to Michelle in a moment. But, Katie Allen, if you lose here in the seat of Higgins, as our questioner this morning has indicated, is it because of Scott Morrison?
What I would say is that the moderate end of the party has had huge success in making sure that we've delivered on things like climate, you know, net zero 2050 target and a plan.
You're not answering my question.
Well, I'm not answering your question because at the end of the day, Australia is a big country with lots of constituencies, and Higgins is one of those constituencies. Now, there is no doubt that it has been a very tough pandemic, and there is a lot of criticism, not just against Scott Morrison, but against Dan Andrews and against other leaders.
My question didn't go... Look, I understand it's a comfortable question, but you're facing electoral annihilation here. According to the polls, according to the crowd,
you should come out to pre-poll and see the streams of Liberals that are supporting me.
Oh, I'm sure there are people voting for you, but you're facing that. Will it be because of Scott Morrison?
Are you basing that on polling with 125 people in
Will
the
it
seat?
Be because of Scott Morrison if
I
you
mean,
lose your seat?
I mean, this is what happened last time, actually. You said the same thing, that it was going to be political annihilation, and that wasn't the case. So polls are just that. They're polls. They're
so this could be 2019 again?
Is on election day.
Absolutely.
Actually, I was interviewed on the ABC and I was told there was going to be a 20% swing against us. Literally, they said that.
Yep.
And no one, the person who was interviewing us, didn't question that. So, you know, it's interesting that that's your view and you're putting your opinion out there. But what I would say is that at the end of the day, people are putting a name, a number next to a candidate that's their candidate.
I want to hear from the other candidate.
And I've heard from many people that they're very happy with what I've done to represent them in the Senate.
Let's hear from the other candidates. Michelle Ananda-Raja, if Katie Allen loses, will it be because of Scott Morrison?
I think that has a lot to do with it. Look, the battle for the moderate heart of the Liberal Party was lost years ago. It was lost when Malcolm Turnbull was turfed out and replaced by Scott Morrison and Peter Dutton as the choices. The reality here is that there are some self-styled so-called moderates around the country who are now being raked over the coals by their constituents over a lack of action. It is not enough to be an incumbent and not represent the views of your constituents.
I
do. You must go... No, I'm sorry, Katie,
you'll have to be brief, Michelle. We're coming up against the news.
Your voting record is very consistent with Matt Canavan and Barnaby Joyce.
Barnaby
on
Joyce
most
votes
things.
With me.
And the
I
reality,
managed to convince Barnaby Joyce to commit to 2050 target
not,
and a plan that
is proud
Katie,
of incumbency
please.
Without representation. So I would say to people
finally,
if you are desperate for change, you must vote this government out.
I want to hear from Sonia Simmonds as well. Final words.
I think the constituents of Higgins want to see the values of the MP that they have in power reflected on the vote of the House and the floor of Parliament. And they want that voting record to look like the words that are spoken in this inner city electorate.
Well, they're your three main candidates, not the only candidates, and a few more to come as part of our forum today as well. So you'll certainly be hearing from them. But I'd love you to thank them for being here this morning and for engaging in a really great conversation. Katie Allen, Michelle Ananda-Raja and Sonia Simmonds. Thank you so much for being here. And all the best to all of you on the hustings.